With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
High Five Casino lets you play your favorite slot and live table games, like blackjack, with the chance to redeem for real cash prizes. High Five Casino has a giant selection of over 1,200 games, including hundreds of exclusive games only found on High Five Casino. It's always free to play, and free coins are given out every 4 hours. Ready to have your own High Five moment? Visit highfivecasino.com. That's high, the number five, casino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. Must be 21 years or older. Terms and conditions apply.
Summer is supposed to be an opportunity to slow down. But when you look at your kids, you can't help but notice that your kids are growing up fast. Help them build independence as they grow with Greenlight. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families where parents can keep an eye on kids' money habits while kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely. It's the easy, convenient way to raise financially smart kids. Get your first month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom's weight management programs are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
Hey there, welcome to Nick Pollock and Friends, where I talk to people I know and who you should know. Today, oh, it's Danielle. Danielle, what's up? It's so good to see you.
It's great to see you too. It's been so long.
It really has. You know, yeah. First Pitch Arizona is so far away. And of course, this year, you know, we're still very conscientious of COVID, and there are fewer trips and opportunities to connect. You're on the other side of the world in San Francisco area.
Not so easy to just drop by and say hello.
Yeah, you know, right? I haven't been on a flight to Arizona. But thank you so much for being here, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really happy to be here. Nervous, but happy.
So Danielle, if you could describe yourself in about 10 words, I'm going to give you 10, not like two. I feel like that's just shortchanging people, but I'm going to give you 10 to describe yourself to everybody listening. How would you do that?
Oh, goodness. You know, I'm going to preface this by saying, you know, I was talking to my 11-year-old earlier today and stuff, because I listened to a few of the episodes just to kind of get an idea of what things were like. Yeah. And I asked my 11-year-old, I said, hey, what's interesting about me? and they said, you're smart, you're pretty, and you know weird things.
Very like, true all right, on all accounts.
You're not really helping me here. I don't know that that's interesting about me, but yeah, sure. Okay, we'll go with it. So I don't know that that's how I would describe myself. First and foremost, I would always say funny. I think I'm funny, and there are certainly some people who don't, but I question their sense of humor. I find myself to be pretty hilarious. Introverted. Which would surprise some people, I think. And then I'm a funny, introverted person, very interested in talking to people, getting to know people, talking about mental health. How many words is that?
I'm going to count that as one. No, it's like the translation in a Godzilla movie, right? actually, you touched on there. I know this from a lot of people is, you know, people that I interact with very socially, but, you know, something that I think about a lot is we see the highlights of people's lives a lot, right? We see these moments of how they want to present themselves publicly a lot. And we don't know, you know, I don't know you 24/7. You don't know me 24/7, right?
Yeah.
And, it might be a shock to some that you know you, that you consider yourself introverted, but it's about how you charge yourself, right? How do you recharge after? And I mean, for me, I know that people give me energy a lot more than take it. But it's not always the case for everybody. And you would say, I'd imagine then that you have to expend the energy when you're around people. And then you, you know, you have to be by yourself and in a very calm space to recharge. Is that right?
Absolutely. And actually, that's something that really became apparent for me during the pandemic. You know, when I started working from home, we have a full household. So it's, you know, myself, my husband, Justin, our two kids, and then my mom and my brother also live with us. So all of a sudden, I was around people constantly.
Yeah.
Whereas before, I would have, you know, my 20 to 30 minute drive to and from work every day. I would have my breaks at work and even my lunchtime. You know, a lot of people love going out to lunch with their coworkers, and I'll do that on occasion. But a lot of the time, I like to just go and sit somewhere, read, and just have some quiet time.
Absolutely.
So that was my recharging time. And with the pandemic, working from home, being around everybody constantly, I found myself getting really anxious and kind of agitated. And it took me a little bit to realize why. And it was because I needed to take the time to go somewhere and just be quiet for a little while, have nobody around me, have nobody asking me for anything, just be able to be with myself and my thoughts.
Definitely. I mean, there's always a balance too, right? It's not like, you know, you say you're an introvert. It's not just 100% that you don't want anybody.
No,
you know, absolutely. Extrovert, you know, I think a lot of extroverts listening to this are like, oh yeah, I could definitely appreciate just some time on the beach just to, you know, meditate or clear the head. But there's a balance between, and I know that I personally go off and seek it a lot, especially being in this apartment and what I call my hobbit hole. But for others, of course, I mean, the pandemic accelerated those thoughts a lot for people, some that were just alone in their apartments and others that were surrounded by so many people and they didn't go off and disperse into work. They all were just under one home and that can be really, really tough.
Yeah. Yeah, it absolutely can. You know, what you said about the recharging, that's really what it is.
Yeah.
You know, I mentioned that I'm an anxious person. It's just kind of a part of my makeup. You know, I do certain things to try and manage it. But nonetheless, it's still there. So for me, being around people, I'm constantly like, what am I doing with my hands? Am I talking enough? Am I talking too much? Am I saying really weird things and people think I'm strange? Like, all these thoughts are constantly going on in my head while I'm hanging out with people. And it's exhausting.
Yeah,
and
right.
So it is. It's a matter. it's a matter of the energy level for me, you know. After it, you know, slump back like, oh, okay, that was fun, but man, that's over.
Absolutely. So let's go back to the beginning with you, Danielle. Did you grow up in the Bay Area as well?
I did. I've pretty much been here all of my life. So started off down in, you know, closer to San Francisco. That's where both of my parents grew up. And then when I was very young, we moved up north to Sonoma County. And other than a brief stint of living in New York, I've been here pretty much all my life. I was a nanny for a little while in New York.
Really? Is that? Oh, that's right. I remember talking about that with you in Arizona, and you really messed up by leaving here. I don't know what you were thinking. This is the best city in the world, and we all know that.
I love it there. I mean, you know, I said earlier that I hadn't taken a plane ride since Arizona, but I take that back because Justin and I went to Vegas. We would go to New York, and I love it. I absolutely love it there. But because the New York events were canceled, we ended up going to Vegas instead, and I was very disappointed. The last time that I was in New York, I think, was when I met you. So back in 2018.
18. Oh, wow.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So what a time that was.
Back in the before days.
Yeah. Oldies, of course.
Yeah. And Justin was busy doing all of his things. And I just wandered around New York all by myself. And it was great. I loved it.
Oh, that sounds so wonderful. So, and yeah, I mean, I remember those. My whole timeline is messed up of when I started understanding the whole community, you know, the fantasy community for those, for the Tat Wars drafts. And I think my first one where I just kind of showed up and said, hey, I'm in New York and everyone else is too, may have been 2017, maybe 18. I honestly don't remember, but I remember being, you know, throwing BP to Tristan Cockcroft one year, or or just going to Foley's and just knowing that everyone's there and seeing Ted Berg. I'm like, oh my God, it's Ted Berg. This is so cool. and it's something that I've really, really missed, through the, through the pandemic are those March meetups, because yes, we see each other a lot in Arizona, but there's a more freedom, I think, to it. When it's also my hometown and it's just,
yeah,
well, everybody's there. It's just such a wonderful, joyous time. There are no, we're just like, whatever. We're all just chilling and hanging out for ages. It's great. And I hope that, you know, next year it's a lot safer out there that allows for something like that. Obviously Foley's done, but though we'll find something. Hopefully they come back too. But going back here, I mean, when you were young, what were your aspirations and dreams? What were you thinking that you'd be at this time? Or going where and doing what?
You know, when I was very young, I wanted to be a writer. That was my thing, was that I wanted to be a writer. Eventually, I got into, you know, being interested more in politics. Mm-hmm. And wanting to perhaps pursue that, I thought, in high school. But life kind of took a different turn, and at one time I thought about going into law and, you know, trying to help survivors and victims of sexual assault.
Right.
But that takes a really, really huge commitment.
Yeah.
And I just didn't know that I had that in me. So, yeah, life took a different turn, and I ended up doing a variety of things when I was young.
And when you were thinking about yourself writing, was it fiction, nonfiction? Was it reporting?
It was, you know, wanting to write the great American novel. And it's,
yeah,
that's, you know, that's, my 11-year-old again was asking me today of, hey, when you were younger, did you ever, you know, try to write books? And I can remember a time that, you know, I must have been 8 or 9, and my friend Charity and I sitting down and making a list of the, you know, books that we wanted to write, and starting to, you know, taking your pages and folding them up and drawing, you know, a little picture on the front and writing a little story inside.
Yeah. I mean, so you must have in your mind right now, this is the story that I would write right now. There's got to be.
You know what? For me, it changed a bit, in that I don't know that I necessarily have stories about other people, or, you know, just characters that I've made up in my mind. I've kind of switched a lot more to, and I haven't written in a while, but when I do write, it's more talking about my own experiences. And so while I'm not a writer in the way that I envisioned, I'm a writer in a different way that suits me a lot more.
Yeah, sure.
You know, I found where things that I have shared have, you know, resonated with other people. And that is really fulfilling to me. And so that's more the type of writing that I enjoy.
It takes a lot of courage to do that. You know, it's not easy to be that vulnerable and to say, look, this is something I've went through. And without going obviously too into detail, of course, I don't, you know, how much you want to talk about it, but,
book, whatever you want to ask.
Well, it's, you know, I was really proud of you that you did that. And I know firsthand how you don't know what the response is going to be. Right. Yes. And, it was really wonderful to see a lot of people, I think, unified and needing a voice like you to be able to say something like that. So yeah, that was wonderful.
It is. It's nerve wracking. There's a lot of time afterwards where I think, oh my goodness, what have I done? You know, there's a little bit of shame involved in kind of opening up, you know, whether it's talking about living with anxiety and depression, you know, or even talking about grief and child loss, which are a lot of things that, you know, I've been really open about. Right. So there's that. Kind of, you feel very vulnerable and exposed afterwards. And I think, at least for me, from how I grew up, there's a feeling of, oh, I need to hide that away. Oh, I shouldn't have ripped that Band-Aid off. I need to cover that all right back up. But pushing through it ends up being, like I said, very fulfilling, because people do come back and, you know, have been very kind in their responses, or have shared with me, you know, some of their own stories. Right. And I've been able to help others, which lifts me up.
Absolutely. You know, something I read, I thought was a very interesting note just about sharing emotions and how we process them, and how I think as we, you know, with every generation, it becomes easier and easier, or at least more accepting to express thoughts and feelings. You phrase it in a fascinating way of how every generation has been raised, and you think about those from World War One and suppressing the trauma from being at war. And then you have the Great Depression, and then you have World War II, and then you have Vietnam, you know, and then those parents, those children of Nam are just starting to be really parents now, or and maybe were their generation separated from that. And each state of it has been trained to not express feelings and to hold it in, and to, you know, trauma isn't acceptable. And to feel those feelings as a vulnerability, and it's damaging, of course. And how it affects the next generation, right? And slowly and surely, we're having better conversations about being human is having those vulnerabilities and those feelings. I remember many a quote saying that, you know, trauma is not your fault, but it's your responsibility, right?
Yeah.
And that's a difficult statement to have, because it's such a hard thing to go through. And the more and more that we can recognize the how it's okay to have gone through that, that it's human, it's very, very common to go through it. The more that we can not only stop running from it and address it, but then also improve the lives of everyone around us as well, who only just wants to help internally. So, so seeing you come forward and talk about it is just another wonderful example. And thank you for doing that.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. You know, there's this interesting, people talk about going through trauma, and, you know, that happens for, you know, nearly everybody, I would think. But we shy away from being affected by it, or showing that we're affected by it. You know, for when we lost our son in 2015, you know, there were a lot of people who, and they mean well, but who say things like, you know, I'm so sorry, be strong, you know, just right. Be strong. That's what you need to do right now. And even my own father, you know, within hours of our son passing, my father was like, all right, well, you just got to go ahead and move on now. Yeah. And it's like, you know, it's, I think that when you're in that type of situation, just of any type of trauma, any kind of difficulty, it's okay to not be strong in the way that people think. It's right. Okay to go ahead and allow yourself to be vulnerable, to lean on the people around you, you know, your loved ones, your friends, to not be the strong one. At that point, that takes a certain amount of strength to go, you know what? I can't hold myself up right now, but I know that there are people around me who can, until I'm able to do it myself.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That kind of, you know, it comes from a place, obviously, of saying, hey, I'm trying to give encouraging words for you, but the actual words are not what you need. Right. It's something a little bit different. To shift this a little bit.
Yeah,
I got, you know, I heard you mention that you had a lot of odd jobs, or you were doing a lot of different things. And I'm so curious. I do want to hear maybe the weirdest one, or the wildest story that you have from your time when you were trying to just kind of figure out what you were doing.
You know, okay, this isn't necessarily around the time of what I was trying to figure out what I was doing, but I do think that this is funny that, when I was 13, I worked at a winery on the bottling line.
Really?
Yeah.
At 13.
Yeah, 13. I had a friend whose father was the general manager at a winery, and he gave the both of us, a job to work on the bottling line. So we took the bottles out of the cases, and this is back when it was a lot more old school than the, you know, kind of high tech stuff that they do now.
Sure. Yeah.
So think more along the lines of like Laverne and Shirley, you know, with the bottling line. So we were putting the bottles onto the tracks. It would take it over. You know, the wine would get filled, cork would be popped in, and then we would have to put the foil caps onto it. It would go through, foil cap would get pressed on, come out, and then we would have to, you know, we had different stations, take them out. And then I also, all this stuff is automated now, but back then, there was a little machine that had glue in it. And you would have to roll the label through the glue and then place the label onto the bottle.
Oh, wow.
I was not very good at this. And I,
yeah, so
I
you had to be dexterous for it to be like actually lined up properly. Like,
get it in the right place, have it lined up with the foil cap.
Oh, I would fail so much at this now. Not even at 13. I would fail this now.
There were so many crooked labels. And I think of all the people who got those bottles, they were like, what is this?
Oh, no.
Glue smeared, and I'm trying to wipe it off, and then it just becomes residue and weird, and you're trying. Yeah,
it was just upside down. Yeah. You know, it's.
The times that we would have to stop everything because we got behind, you know, you think you're doing fine with putting the foil caps on and all of a sudden you're five bottles behind.
Yeah, I'm thinking of this I Love Lucy episode where she keeps having to eat the sweets, you know? And
Except I was 13 and couldn't just down a bottle.
Oh, wow. I mean, how long did you last at that?
We did it all summer.
Really?
Yeah, all summer.
Oh my God, the first week must have been something else.
And, it was definitely, there was a big learning curve there. But, you know, for me at the time, it was great money. I was able to, you know, growing up, you know, I grew up really poor. So for me to be 13, junior high, you know, my mom couldn't afford getting me, you know, the cool clothes.
Right, yeah.
So having a job like that, I was able to then go out and do my own shopping and get the clothes that I wanted and liked and stuff. So,
yeah, that must have been great. It must have been feeling, you know, that individualism, right?
Just yes. Yes, absolutely. Wonderful. Like, you know, in elementary school, when you're my mom made my clothes, was not good. It was really, really not good and stuff. And, you know, I grew up with hand-me-downs, clothes from secondhand stores, all of those things.
I mean, so here's the thing. You have this very good reason. Right. You have a very good reason out of your control for all this stuff. Me, I just, and I'm 6'3" out of nowhere. And I don't even understand that it's not great for my jeans to go up to like halfway down my knee. You know, that's just me being oblivious. And that's my excuse, you know? But eventually I learned like, oh, clothing is a thing that I should focus on when I was maybe 20.
Yeah,
and you were like way ahead of the game. You're like, okay, 13, I got this.
I have short girl problems. So for me, it's the jeans dragging.
It could look good if you roll it up a little, right? That's not so bad. Yeah,
thank goodness I grew up in a time where, you know, pegging your jeans was really cool.
Oh, but, there you go. Nice.
Yeah. Our kid asked me a couple of years ago, hey, do you know how to peg jeans? Oh, yeah, I do.
You've come to the right place.
Pro at this. What kind of peg do you want? I got some different styles we can try out.
Oh, wow. Okay, so that's fantastic. And give me just a quick roadmap. We're going across the country of Danielle, getting to where you are now and where you started pretty much. Like, okay, where'd you go to school? How did that progression happen?
You know what I have, and this is actually something that I wish wasn't the case. I never went to college.
Is that right? Like my father never did either.
I went to the junior college, for a while here locally. It's a really great school. But I never progressed on from there, which is a big regret. I wish that I had more confidence during high school. I wish that I had really tried to pursue something more then, but I didn't. Justin and I have talked about, now that he's finished with school, because that took like 13 years or something like that to get him through with his degree. And right. So once he finished, we had talked about me going back and pursuing an education and doing something.
So two things I want to say is, one, you've done so well for yourself without it. And I think that in many ways it has shown how this understanding of, oh, okay, you go to high school and you do all that, and then you have to pay this massive amount of money to go to college now. And obviously that was the case for, you know, my boomer parents. Things have changed so drastically. And the conversations I've had on this podcast a lot are the necessity for it. I mean, it is completely different than it used to be. The amount of online resources available are insane. And I think the only reason to jump in at this point is just for that piece of paper for certification for something that you know that you do want to do. And if that makes sense, if it's a very specific, look, I need, you know, I need to get at my MBA or because I want to go into that field, then that makes, I totally understand. But for example, if you want to get into coding, do Khan Academy stuff, you know, and just make your own website and then you'll get hired somewhere and do that. I'm someone who graduated with a psychology degree and thought I was going to go to grad school for that and didn't want to pay all the money to do it. And then had a computer science minor and didn't want to do that. And I worked at Guitar Center, you know, and I fell into, you know, pictureless and everything like that. Right. And I was so bad and I still am very bad at it, but a little bit better now over 8 years. Right.
But
there's so many, there are so many resources of the internet and people in this incredible community, that have taught me so much along the way. So, there are obviously reasons to get that degree. And it's more of the, you know, the regret that you're having. I'm not here to say that you shouldn't have it or anything like that. But I will say the, you know, there was a stigma, at least with me growing up, about not having one. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, my father really taught me that it was wrong. I mean, he never went to college and he's, you know, one of the smartest people I know and figure things out and did really well for himself. And, it really taught me to question that notion. And now, so more than ever, it's just like college is a luxury for to network as a kid and for me to become myself a bit. And you clearly don't need those things that I lacked going to college in that regard. So
for me, I think it's more a matter of wishing that I had pursued something that I was passionate about. Rather mm-hmm. than simply doing whatever yeah. I could to get by, which is really yeah. what I've done for most of my life is, you mm-hmm. know, whatever I could do to get by. I mean, you know, as a kid, lots of babysitting, worked in a snack shop, worked with kids a lot. I've done daycare, nanny, you know, and eventually I ended up working for a program that I had volunteered for as a kid. Back when I was interested in being an attorney, I worked for a nonprofit that had volunteer teens who acted as attorneys for kids that had been arrested for minor infractions. So shoplifting
right.
or, you know, maybe they were graffiti, those mm-hmm. kinds of things. And so it was a program that instead of having them go through the juvenile.
Right. And just make the conditions worse. And then all of a sudden someone that could be like, okay, let's, you know, let's yeah. try to adjust this. Now it just makes it all worse and it snowballs.
Exactly. So this was an intervention program.
Yeah.
And so it was great because I got to defend the teens who came through the program. And then eventually as an adult, I started working for the nonprofit. So I helped run the teen court program that they had. And then I also helped run the theater group that they had where these teens would get together and write about issues that teens were facing and then go out and perform them in the schools.
That's wonderful.
So I did that for a long time and it was great. And then moved into doing more administrative. And so that got me on my start of doing administrative work. And that's mm-hmm. pretty much what I've done. And don't get me wrong. Okay. There are times that I've worked for places where it was something I really could be passionate about, like the nonprofit. I've worked for wineries. I worked for a Native American tribe in their housing program. And that was great. And now I work for a town and in their public works department. So it's one of those wonderful. Things where it's just, it's, you know, I enjoy the work that I do. I enjoy the people that I work with, but it's not something that I feel very fulfilled in mm-hmm. and passionate about. And I'd still like to find that for myself.
So I'm 45. I mean, do you have an idea and a place that you want to explore in the very least to start off?
You know, I do. I mean, would I like to be able to, you know, write and blog and make money off of that? Sure. Do I think that'll happen? No, not so much. Mm-hmm. You know, but I really would like to get into work that is more about, and I hope this stays within your guidelines. it's not a swear word, but sex positivity, and especially so in helping survivors of assault, or
it's absolutely in okay. my guidelines. Yes, of course, this is a very important topic.
So, for me, as a survivor of childhood abuse, you know, I can see the way it impacted me. And my view of sex and how that growth for me kind of progressed and the ways in which someone could have helped me. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I would love to be able to take that and help others. You know, I also think that, you know, confidence, communication, these things in that realm aren't automatic for a lot of people.
Right. Yeah.
And so, helping people in that way is something that I really would like to do.
Well, I think that's wonderful. And that's not something you can just take a course for online. So I understand that, you know, you need to search for other avenues for that. But I think you'd be wonderful at that. And that's obviously a very fantastic cause for you to pursue. You mentioned very quickly about writing and blogging. I just want to tell anyone listening, if that is not, that is not the way to jump in now. If I were to jump in and say like, hey, I want to make picture lists now, I wouldn't do it like that. I probably would just do it with videos and podcasting, honestly. It's a lot harder to do it now than it ever was, especially with writing.
Yeah. And that's hard because for me, I express myself a lot better in written form,
sure,
I think, than I do. Oh, video would be so hard for me.
You're doing great right now as we record only audio over video. It's there's a charm in writing. You know, there are certain things that I do in the SB Roundup that I would never say out loud, but I get to write it because it's just kind of lost on the page and it's just can be interpreted in a different way. But if I said it out loud, I would just not do that. And I, you know, and there's something also to be said about forcing yourself to be creative and forcing yourself to admit, than saying it out loud, which can be quicker and easier. I mean, podcasting is easier for me than it is writing. Writing is a lot. It's just, there's just so much more, calculation going on and effort and time. You know, I have the whole paragraph written in my head, but it takes a good 30 seconds to let it all out. And that's more exhausting than just saying it. Right. I mean, I used to write my articles for Fangraphs, pacing in the kitchen and saying it to myself, the entire article.
Wow.
And just say, this is what I'm going to write. I'm going to start with this. I'm going to talk about this sentence, maybe do a joke there. And then you're going to do a GIF and then a chart of this, another this, a GIF. And then I'm going to close it out with something else. And then I'm going and take an hour and a half and write it. But writing there's a flow and a very specific thing about it. And you have to do it so much. And podcasting and video, for as whatever you want to say about how the world works and how you dislike it, well, that's what everyone consumes. It's easier. It's simpler. It's how everything in the world is just getting more condensed into being streamlined. And that's the world. Hi, what's up, world? to get used to it. And I feel very, very fortunate that I started 8 years ago. So I was able to still at least get in on the article landscape, but it's not what I would do now. So, I mean, you know, I will always say to everybody, oh, cool, you're looking to get into some field. Well, you should do a podcast and you should do a video on it. And no, it's not for everybody. So, and there's a lot more to be said about not being a content creator and actually working with, you know, direct people that can do so many good things. So I really hope you do pursue that. And, you know, you do find your right spot in it.
I hope so. You know, the pandemic kind of derailed things a bit, mm-hmm. but I've done a lot of research in, you know, what it would take to dive into that. And, you know, I'm hoping that for us right now, we just got to get through this. We got to get through to our baby being, you know, safe and vaccinated and,
yeah,
you know, get to that point. And then I'll look at pursuing something for myself.
There we go. All right. So,
yeah.
In this time then, between then, you have to entertain yourself. So I want to hear all the hot takes from Danielle. Favorite movie. What do we got?
Oh, I'm terrible at this sort of thing. So I wouldn't call myself wishy-washy, but it depends on my mood.
Kind sure. of okay. What's the first one you thought of though, when I said that?
Shawshank Redemption.
Oh, that's a great one. Yeah.
I love that movie.
You want to know the one thing that like I always go to that I just, I don't know. Like the whole process of him escaping, right? Sorry, spoiler alert. If you haven't watched Shawshank Redemption, I'm so sorry.
It's your own fault at this point.
It's like 25 years or whatever, 30 years at this point, okay?
Don't sorry. Remind me.
Tim Robbins at the end of this is essentially sneaking out for like, what, 2 miles an hour, a mile and a half through like the waste tunnel?
Yeah.
Right? And yeah. This very small thing, I could never do that. It doesn't matter what you said, it was at the end of the tunnel. Mentally, the strength and fortitude to crawl through that in that claustrophobic space, to commit without seeing the end and just believing that there is one. Oh boy.
Yeah. That's because you don't have kids.
It's just true. I don't.
Once you have kids, you're like, bodily fluids, been there.
Okay. Well, it's not even the bodily fluids. It's just the space. It's like the claustrophobic nature of it.
Yeah, I can understand that. I do. I have trouble with tight, contained spaces. There is, in San Francisco, there's the Exploratorium. And they have the, I can't remember what it's called. I think it's the tactile sphere. But basically, it's this huge sphere that you can go inside of, and you go into a tunnel and it is complete darkness. And oh, you wow. have to feel your way around. There are occasions where they'll have, you know, there's emergency exits and that sort of thing. So you'll get a little bit of a glow from the light. But for the most part, it's total darkness. And so it's interesting because, you know, without your sight, you know, your hearing and then the sense of touch and stuff, it really just becomes a lot more prominent. And so it's great. They have lots of different things on the floors and walls and ceiling for you to feel. Mm-hmm. But the first time I went in, there was a bit of a, oh God, I think I might have a panic attack right now.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I'm a gang super anxious just hearing about it. I mean, I've had the dreams of like following friends or something through something. And then like, I'm trying to go, I have this distinct memory of like, I'm trying to fit through like almost a dollhouse, and you know, and I go through the small door and I get like stuck, and there's like, no, that's my life now, you know. And it's not even like a dollhouse in like this big space, it's just like, no, I'm like all these series of hallways and everything like that. It's something that I would like to do just to, you know, get over that anxiety, right?
Yeah.
But anyway, that's my takeaway from Shawshank. Nothing else of the movie. Not all the classic right scenes. Just like, dude, I couldn't do that. Everything else I could do. Not that.
You never know until you're actually faced with a situation.
Oh, man.
You know, because you got to think, yes, there's that small pipe tunnel.
Right.
But is that more suffocating with the possibility of then being on the other side in the open air than the idea of suffocating in a small room?
Yeah. Yeah.
Slowly for the rest of you. So I think that sometimes you don't know until you're going to
say you've been challenged, right?
Yeah, right. Exactly. You don't really know how you'll react and what direction you'll go in until that happens. You know, before that, I would say, I don't know if you've ever seen What Dreams May Come.
Oh, yeah. Of course. Robin Williams and Cuban Gooding Jr.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I have always loved that movie. And I don't know. A lot of people, especially Robin Williams fans, you know, it's not their favorite. There are plenty of others.
Well, it's a different Robin Williams film.
It was definitely a deeper, in some ways darker movie.
It's a spiritual movie. Let's put it that way.
Yes. But I loved the part. And again, spoiler, sorry for anybody who hasn't seen this, you know, 35-year-old movie. But there's a point where he goes and he, you know, finds his wife and he sits down with her. And the point is not to rescue her. The point is just simply to be with her. And be by her side, you know, for whatever it is that she's going to endure, he's going to endure it with her.
Yeah.
And there was just something really poignant and beautiful about that to me.
Yeah, that's a lesson that I think a lot of us need to understand is, you know, I feel it when I'm going through something, I'm not looking to the person next to me to solve it, to, you know, I don't expect them to, right?
Yeah.
It's just to know that I'm not alone and yeah. that there's someone to help if I need it. And that's huge. That's very, very important. So, you know, it's a hard in the moment when you're seeing someone go through stuff too. And, you know, yeah. I certainly have that feeling of just wanting to do everything to stop it for them, but you can't, you know, that's not really what they even want you to try to do. Right. It's yeah. just, hey, be there with them. So yeah. I love that call too. All right. Other side of the coin than TV shows. What do we got?
TV shows. Yeah. I don't know why, but I really love Grey's Anatomy. It makes me sad all the time. Huh. Like, you know, Justin will walk into the room and I'm sitting there just blubbering mess.
Is it still on right now? Is it like
continuing? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's Seriously? Still on. Yeah.
How many I don't even been? Know. Is it been like 20 years?
Maybe, probably something oh, like wow. that. Oh, yeah. It's been on for a really long time.
Man, so much focus on one person's anatomy. It's insane. That's wild to me. I have a distinct memory from college freshman year of all the girls on my floor watched Grey's Anatomy together. So as the guys that didn't watch it, we just played poker that night instead.
Yeah, lots of McDreamy, McSteamy back in those days.
Oh, right. McDreamy. Oh, yeah. Forgot that. Oh,
yep.
man.
Yep. They're both gone. So.
No oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
I mean. Yeah. How could the show live on without him?
You know, they've still got Meredith, and that's all that matters. So I love that. And I don't watch a lot of TV. I don't often mm-hmm. get an opportunity to watch sure, a lot yeah. of TV. But Justin and I make sure to watch Wednesday nights or date night, and we mm-hmm. watch Survivor and The Challenge.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Do you know that I watched the first 30 seasons of Survivor with my mom?
Really?
Yeah. First 30 of them. I mean, ever since it started, it was like, okay, Thursday nights, this is like, we ensure that we hang out and we watch Survivor, right? And we would record it even when I was in college, like when we would meet up, we would watch that episode, awesome. You know? And then eventually I said, all right, I don't think this works anymore. We need to have a relationship outside of Survivor as I'm a you know, proper adult now. But you still watch it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. Watching. Have you watched all of them all the way through?
I have not. Justin has, but I okay. have not. You know, yeah. I remember watching when the show first came out. I watched it a lot. And then I was in my 20s and I was doing other things. So,
well, shout out to Kentucky Nick, who is a PL Plus subscriber and is inside of our Discord, which is one of the greatest things I've ever told my mom. And I was like, just let you know, Kentucky Nick, you know, Survivor winner. is a PL Plus subscriber, mom.
That's awesome.
So yeah, if Kentucky Nick is, why aren't you, listener? Get on it. All right. You can I give a new promo code every single Monday on the list. Go look for it. Just read the notes and you join the Discord, you dingus. Anyway.
I had an opportunity to, I met the War Dog while we were in Vegas.
Oh, so, is that right?
Really nice guy. Yeah.
Oh man. I mean, there's so many legendary people from that show. There's Coach. I don't know why Coach is the first one I thought of. But my mom and I always joke, like Rob talking about Amber. I miss my Amber. You know, that's what she would say to me. I miss my Amber. It's just, I always felt that Russell should have won at least once.
Yes.
I felt that was such a crime.
Wholeheartedly right. agree. For me, the people who go on the show and start getting upset and whining, well, this person lied to me. You're on Survivor.
What, yeah. What well, I think the element that I missed while watching that in retrospect, it makes more sense to me now, is that Russell, like we saw just Russell, the tactician, but we didn't see Russell, the social person. Like all the yeah. little like normal conversations. And I imagine he just treated everyone horribly. And like no one wanted to like look past that and give him $1 million. Right. Like they were just like, well, you suck, man. I'm sorry. Like I don't like you. I'm not going to give it to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I don't care if like, that's how you did it. Like, well, you stink, you know, that's why everyone went along with your stuff. Cause everyone thought that like no one was going to vote for you. Cause you stink so much, you know?
And they were right.
Yeah. So whatever, I guess. But I love that one. You said Survivor, you said a second show too, right?
The Challenge.
The Challenge. MTV, I don't know what that is.
Challenge. Oh, no. Right. So back in the day when they had The Real World, and then they also had
Real World's Challenge. Yeah. Yeah.
And so they brought it together and they, And so you have, you know, a bunch of, well, it used to be that you had, you know, a bunch of 20 somethings all competing for a bunch of money with, you know, very similar in a lot of ways to Survivor, except for they do cooler challenges to me. I mean, there's really, you know, they get to ride on big rigs and try to solve puzzles or, you know, ride on helicopters and dangle from them. Just some really cool stuff. And yeah, that's my guilty pleasure.
Ever apply to any of these?
Oh, no, no. I could never deal with being on one of those shows. Absolutely not.
I think you'd be pretty good in Survivor. I mean, you absolutely have the wits to do it.
Survivor, maybe. I think that I would do okay socially. I don't know how I would do with some of the challenges.
Yeah, but whatever. Like, winning the challenges isn't like, you know, and not to mention they certainly move away at times from, you know, like I'm worried about like, oh, these strength things. I'm like, well, I'm not the strongest man ever, you know? But then again, they like a lot of these challenges are just either of will or of just like, hey, are you good at puzzles, right? Can you figure this out? You know, can you remember things? You know, it's not always just who is the most like ready person to climb over this and do that fastest. You know, it's, you know, they certainly balance the two.
I just don't know how entertaining I would be, but also I worry about the,
come on, Danielle. You would be amazing.
I worry though about the food, the being
hungry. Oh yeah,
I don't that's too well hungry.
Yeah,
you know, Justin and I, our honeymoon, we went to France. So his grandmother lives there, and
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so we were running late the day that we were leaving. We woke up late and so had to rush, get all of our bags. And, you know, from there, we've got to run and get to the train station, everything to get to the
airport. So you were hangry.
So we could not get food beforehand. Yeah. And then I told him once we got through security, we've got to grab food. And he said, no, we don't have time. We have to go and get to our gate. And we have to go now. Now, we had a very long flight coming back. And they didn't serve food on the flight. They, you know, you had a little bag of peanuts, maybe. So I'm not proud of this. I'm amused by it. But nonetheless, I threw a little stomping fit in the airport and kicked my suitcase because I was very angry that he wouldn't let me get food. And I was very hungry. And I knew that it was only going to get worse during the flight.
Oh, my God.
And he loves to tell the story and tease me about it. But yeah, I don't do well when I'm not.
Right, fed. Right. I understand that a lot. I mean, for me, it's like, okay, I better have rice. I better just like, you know, I can, I'm okay if I just get like just a little bit, just a little bit to satisfy me. But yeah, I mean, would, it might be a
weight loss program for me.
Yeah. Well, you know? No, but it's so like, I probably would faint, honestly. Like I have a history of fainting, believe it or not.
Really?
I've been really good like the last decade, but yeah, I had, you know, when I was growing up, I had like multiple, like once every year or every other year, I had some incident because I just didn't understand what was going on, you know? So like I'm a hyper aware of how like I can all of a sudden become like super weak and just, you know, fall over, which then of course sends shockwaves for miles. but that's probably the thing that would worry me the most. And the thing is, people have fainted and been removed from the game from Survivor before, right? Like it's going to happen. Yeah. Of course it is. You're going to overexert and all this stuff. And what stinks is like when you faint, like you're fine in like an hour normally at most, you know, all you need is just like something in you. And I mean, I know this. I mean, there are certain, you know, levels of it. But for then in Survivor, they're like, way too much of a liability. Not a chance. You faint once. Doesn't matter. He's like, oh, my God, his heart rate drops so much. Like, yeah, that's called fainting. Like, that's what happens during it. And then it goes back up, you know? We have to remove from the game. We don't know if this is going to happen. You're like, fine, but you don't have to, but fine.
I'm okay, really.
Yeah,
they don't want to be medically taken out. That's the worst. Yeah.
That is the worst. I always find it funny also when like they show up in the next thing and they have this like large cast all of a sudden. It's like, wait, when did that happen? You're surviving. You're not allowed to have a large cast. Okay. And like, they don't want, again, liabilities, all this stuff. It's like, I want, should they have a cast though? I don't know about that. That's fine. I mean, would you, okay. So like, I always wanted to go to like a reunion back in the day and stuff like that. Have you done like any of those things as a fan of the show?
Gone to anything?
Yeah, I think like a lot of the reunions also are at least on the West Coast a lot. Maybe sometimes they're in New York.
Yeah, probably. No, I've never gone to any of those things.
All right, fine.
I enjoy watching them, but no.
Yeah, okay.
It's been enjoyable to see them, you know, due to the pandemic, have to go back to the way it used to be of reading the votes there.
That's right. And they didn't. Oh, they've done that?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Because that always bothered me so much.
The last two seasons, I know it was, and don't get me wrong, you know there's a certain element of cheesiness to Survivor and, yeah, you know, the reading of the votes or even just, you know, the tribal council and stuff. But yeah, the first time that they did that where he walked away and then you cut to, you know, whatever studio.
New York, they're in, yeah, and, right.
You know, and everybody.
Wait, and he's on the helicopter looking out with the urn in his hand. Oh my God. Unreal.
Seeing everybody suddenly in their nice clothes and, you know,
yeah, it's like all of a sudden Jeff Probst has turned into Tom Cruise, you know? Oh my God.
Yeah, right. So I wasn't a big fan of that. I liked it when they read the votes right there immediately. So it was cool to see them have to revert back to that.
Absolutely. All right. And going off of Survivor, because I'm sure people tuned in like, oh, yeah, Survivor Talk. This is what I want. No. You must listen to music, right?
Oh, yeah. I listen to a lot of music.
Okay. Do you play too?
No. I wish that I did. I'd really like to learn how to play the guitar. But,
oh, yeah.
You know, fourth grade, I played the flute.
Oh, of course. That's wonderful. You know. you were wonderful at it, I imagine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. My teacher.
If you ever actually like move forward with a guitar, let me know. I, you know, worked at a guitar center for 11 months, thought I was going to play guitar forever. I was in a band that I'm not going to say the name of, so no one can Google it. Yeah,
I've seen some of your videos of you by yourself, so.
Oh, God. There's one that, like, Twitch.
I thought there was two.
I think it's just one because I did this whole project of writing a song every day through a year in 2013, and only one of them was me actually singing because I was like, I need something that's different. And I never thought, like, anyone would ever watch this. Jesus.
Look what you've done to yourself.
I know. It's a terrible song. I'm a terrible singer.
I don't think you're a terrible singer.
Yeah, I'm a terrible singer.
Okay. Listen, I'm a terrible singer. My youngest will cover my mouth when
I'm
singing bedtime lullabies.
They're so unfiltered, aren't they?
Yeah, just no, mama. No. I'm like, aw. Although I did make, I like singing. I enjoy singing. I'm terrible at it.
Mm.
So I will, in the car, turn the volume up really loud so that I can't hear it. I don't want to listen to it.
Well, okay.
Drown out the
You must have done karaoke before.
I have done karaoke.
And what is your song?
Depends on my mood. Kind of person.
Because sure.
I like such a wide variety of music. I mean, I listen to country. I listen to bluegrass. I like classical music. I like
death metal.
You know, night. All right, maybe not music. death metal is the screaming. The screaming is a little bit.
Yeah, I can't. I can't do screaming. I can't do growl as much. Yeah.
Yeah. I like pop music. I like a wide variety.
Well, hey, don't be ridiculous. Don't go really push yourself there like in pop music. Ease up, Danielle.
I'm sorry. I like to be, you know, on the edges of what's cool.
Yeah.
What can I say? So right. I don't have a set song that I do for karaoke. And I will say this. I am terrible at singing, but for whatever reason, the We Rockstar I was really good at making sure that I stayed within the proper level, like 99%, 100. I don't know how in the world, but I still sound horrible.
Well, and I'm sure you did a great job with that.
No, I sing all the time, though, and I make up songs constantly.
You make them up?
Yeah, I make up songs all the time.
What do you mean? What do you mean you make them up?
I will, you know, especially with the kids goofing off, I will sing about whatever it is that we're doing.
Oh, yeah, you'll sing actions and everything like that. Oh, yeah, that's the best. Yeah.
My youngest one night was like, sing the Little Bear song. And I was like, what is the Little Bear song? I don't know what you're talking about. And was very adamant that I had to sing the Little Bear song. So I made one up.
And well, can you please sing me? I actually was really hoping you'd bring this up, because I would love for you to sing the Nick Pollock and Friends song. I know you know it, and I would just really, I think all of our listeners right now would love to hear you sing the Nick Pollock and Friends song.
What? Oh, I'm so sorry, Nick. I can't hear you anymore. Oh, my God, let's get out. What?
This was a request sent in from an anonymous listener. They're like, oh man, Danielle Salinger's coming on. Oh man. I really would just love to hear the Nick Pollock and Friends song.
Never gonna happen.
I tried, everybody. Vlad Sedler rapped for this podcast.
Well, Vlad is amazing. So
Vlad is amazing.
You know,
and he did such a great job.
I'm not surprised by that. I will sing Little Bear, but that's about it.
I hope in post you send me something that I can attach to the start of this podcast as the intro song. And if you heard that, congratulations. If you didn't, Danielle, you know, you just got a Twitter at what is it? That Mouthy Wife, is that right?
I can never remember what each thing is called. So it's at Mrs. D. Salinger.
Okay.
But I changed it to That Mouthy Wife, just for the whatever the name is that kind of
shows. Oh yeah, the username, or like the display name, and then
my
make sure you tweet at Danielle and say, come on, he deserves it, he deserves a theme for this that only you can provide. I mean, I do karaoke every so often. I mean, obviously different now. The ones that, I mean, everyone's gonna hear what I say, or like with the songs I do, oh yeah, of course Nick does that. But it's, you know, there's a pleasure in life of singing Whole New World and whispering, don't you dare close your eyes. There's just something just so sweet and serene about that. Britney Spears Toxic is up there.
Oh, nice.
You know what? If you send me the Nick Pollock and Friends song, maybe we can arrange it, Danielle.
Oh, I see. So if I do that, then when Justin and I come out to New York, we'll go.
We'll do Toxic. Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
Deal. I'll sign that deal. Absolutely.
I think that I'd have to go with some sort of Prince song, most likely. You know,
okay.
I like to get up and reenact some of the dances that I did when I was, you know, 9 and 10, dancing around to Prince. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good call.
A little raspberry beret.
Mm. And just so you know,
I had some great moves back then.
Of course you did. Just so you guys know, there's also Wanted Dead or Alive, John Bon Jovi.
Oh.
And by the way, I don't think I've said this story. My dad was a recording engineer, right, at Power Station in New York. And I'm sure he's fine telling the story. And Bon Jovi's uncle ran the place, was, you know, pretty much owned the studio. So my dad, assistant engineer, long day, like 14 hours, is about to go home. And, you know, his boss says, no, Malcolm, you got to stay. Little Bon Jovi's got to make his demo.
Oh, my gosh.
So Bon Jovi goes in there and records a demo. This is before, like, Richie Sambora and everything. And my dad's like, ugh. You know, like, oh, fine. And he records it.
Punk kid.
You know, and I'm like, well, Dad, what, you know, how was it? He goes, well, let's just say, you know, he really got fortunate hooking up with Richie Sambora. You know, I'm really happy that partnership worked for him. You know, which is absolutely wild to me.
When I was young, I had Bon Jovi up on my wall and 21 Jump Street Johnny Depp.
Oh, yeah.
So apparently I had a thing for the Johnnies.
Yeah, well, you married Johnny Mason, right? But is there, like, right now, if you had to put on an album Are you putting it on Prince? Is that right? Or are you putting it on Bon Jovi? What are you putting on?
No, these days I've been listening to a lot of the Teskey Brothers, which is two brothers, a band out of Australia.
Yeah.
And I really love their sound. Both just their playing style and then little bluesy rock, a lot of mixture of a lot of influences and stuff. But the voice, for me, the voice a lot of times will really get to me. So they've got a great sound.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the most important thing. A lot of people talk to me about the lyrics of songs, and I say 5% of the time, the lyrics of a song are why I like it or hate it.
Yeah.
And that's it. I don't really care about what the words are. I just care about what everything sounds like. What's the harmony? What's the, you know, what are all the instruments? How does the voice sound, right? How are the words spoken? Not
for
just
me,
the actual words.
The words, it depends on the song.
I'm minority.
It really depends on the song, because there are times that the words will really strike me. Mm-hmm. Justin is terrible about listening to the words. There have been many times where, you know, we'll be driving in the car, song comes on the radio, and he goes, oh, and he reaches over, grabs my hand, and says, whenever I hear this song, I think about you.
Just, oh, no.
And I'm like, do you realize that this song is about a breakup? He's talking about the girl has broken up with him and has moved on with another man. And he's trying to fight himself on calling her when he's drunk at 2 a.m. This reminds you of me?
The answer is no. The answer is no. You know, it's just, there's certain times when, like, you think you just recognize this song is about someone else. It's about some love interest. And that's like, oh, who's my love interest? Oh, it's my wife, you know? Sometimes it's just that simple. All right.
The guy's talking about his love for this woman, and that's what Justin identified with.
Yeah.
Sure. I'll remember just that here.
Okay, well, I mean, what was the song at your wedding? Did you have one?
The song at our wedding. Oh my goodness, all of a sudden I'm blanking on the song at our wedding.
Justin knew it. No, I have no idea. I didn't ask him that.
Oh my goodness. I don't know why I can't remember the name. We played the Beatles. Instead of the regular wedding march, walking down the aisle, we played Something.
That's my favorite song. You know,
really?
It's from the first note, everything that follows is exactly what it should be.
For me, it's got that nice, good, slow melody for walking down the aisle, you know, and in it, something in the way she moves. And, you know, it felt like, for me, the perfect song for walking down the aisle, because it was either that, or we did talk at one point, but I was vetoed of doing the Imperial Death March. So I was, you know, it was Justin who wanted to get married and not really me. So, but I
think Something was a better choice. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Just a little bit.
Man. I love that song so much. I was actually really fortunate. I went to see McCartney at MetLife Stadium with Alan the Dare about 2 weeks ago.
Oh, that's amazing.
It was such a good time. And yeah, and McCartney played Something during it. And it's just the best song.
Yeah.
It really, really, really is. All right. So I don't know what song you danced to. It doesn't matter. Something is fine.
I think it was Alan Jackson. There's a song, and it's kind of our song because Justin laughed, because in it, it talks about, you know, going through the different stages of life with a partner. And Remember When. And it talks about Remember When 30 Seems So Old. And so every time that part would come on, I'd freak out a little bit and stuff.
Oh, yeah, of course.
In my 30s when Justin and I got married and had a family and everything. And so that became the big joke. I put together our, you know, the little favor that we gave away to people was a disc of just a lot of different songs that we love and had meant something to us, or that just spoke to me about, you know, relationships and love and stuff. And so that's what we gave away. And I still have it, still listen to it. I love all the songs that we played.
Yeah, that's absolutely wonderful. So I've taken a lot of your time so far. There are two last questions I do want to ask you.
All right.
First one is one that I ask a lot of people. What mantras do you have? What are the things they say? Okay, cool. This is a mantra that I live by.
You know, okay. I listened to the Derek Carty episode.
Oh, yeah. The first one. Great one.
That I listened to. Yes. And I heard you ask him this and I thought, oh, no, what is mine? And, you know, the only thing that really came up for me is something that I only started a few years ago, 2018, as a matter of fact. And this is going to sound odd. Maybe it does to me, at least. I have become somehow afraid of flying. I used to be fine with it. A nervous flyer. But now where I really, like near panic attack status. Okay, I still do it and, you know, push through it. But I started a little mantra for myself of a lot of people will tell themselves, it's going to be okay. It's going to be fine. This is going to be okay. That doesn't work for me.
Right.
Because I've had a lot of stuff in my life where, you know what? It just wasn't okay. It didn't turn out fine. So instead I tell myself, I have no control over this. Whatever is going to happen is going to happen. And there are a lot of things in our lives that we do have a hand in, but there are certain times that you just don't. And part of relieving my anxiety about that is just reminding myself, I don't have control over this. Whatever's going to happen is going to happen. And then I'll deal with that. And that has helped to calm me and ease. And so I've taken it from just the plane ride to applying it to more stuff in my life. There are certain things that I just am along for the ride. And then once I get to where we are, then I'll jump in and I'll, you know, deal with where I am.
Yeah, there you go. It's a very long mantra, but
I mean, the mantra is I have no control over this.
Right. There it is. I worry about what you can control. Right. And which is very, very important one. And, you know, just the act of mental focus itself of how we, you know, the time we focus mentally on certain aspects of our lives, it's very important. And part of what meditation is, to really trust the foundations that you've already placed. So you don't waste the mental, the mental strength that you have on things, that you can't control. Wonderful answer.
Back to what you said in the beginning about expending energy.
Yeah.
You know, if you know exactly. You have a limited amount of energy, you want to put it in the right places.
Yep. So the last thing I do want to ask, which I'm very curious about, you know, here you are right now. It is the end of June, 2022. Mm-hmm. And when you see your ideal self in 5-10 years, what does that look like for you?
My ideal self right now. Okay. Again, going back to a bit of the beginning, when we were talking, you asked me to come up with 10 words to describe myself.
Yeah.
This is something I'm working on. I have a really bad habit of negative things will be the things that come up first. So I'm working on changing that, of talking more positively to and about myself. So a lot of my where I see myself in 5 years is more a matter of my own personal growth of, you know, being in a place where talking positively about myself is automatic rather than something that I have to think about. Being more comfortable with putting myself first and taking care of my needs, and not seeing that as a distraction from taking care of the others in my life that I'm responsible for, you know, being okay with doing that sort of thing. And that includes really focusing and pursuing something that I am passionate about, that I enjoy and feel fulfilled by, whether that is going into, you know, doing work with survivors, or if that's, you know, simply I'm still doing my job, but I'm writing more often and interacting with others that, you know, want to talk about the things that I'm passionate about. In 5 years, that's what I'm hoping for, that I'm just a more fulfilled and positive version of myself.
Wonderful. Fantastic answer. I love that. And however I and everybody listening can help, I'm sure they will love to help get you there, Danielle. But that's going to do it for today. Would you like to share anything that, you know, how people can reach you, what you're doing, anything that you want to let our listeners know about? Now is the time.
All right. You can find me at Mrs. D. Salinger on Twitter. There, I tease my husband a lot. caught myself really well there. Tease my husband a lot.
Good job. I'm proud of you.
Thank you. I talk a lot about some of the things that we talked about here. I also host a mental health meetup every month for individuals that just want to get together, and we try to have a kickoff topic. So maybe, you know, talking about resources. So books that we've read, on different mental health topics, or, you know, songs, music that help us when we're going through a difficult time. So we have kickoff topics and we meet for an hour once a month and just talk about whatever comes up. So if people are interested in that, they can always contact me and I can give them more details. I do have a blog that I hope to add to at some point, but it's beingrealwithdanielle.com. So they can go and see some of my older stuff where I have talked about child loss. I've talked about suicide prevention, anxiety and depression, and a variety of things. Going after goals. Reassessing goals.
Well, that's absolutely wonderful. And everybody go and check that out. But that's going to do for this episode of Nick Pollock and Friends. So my name is Nick Pollock, and that was my friend, Danielle Salinger.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like season tickets to watch your favorite team, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like paying for parking. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
It's time to have your high five moment with High Five Casino, the top social casino where the action and real prizes never stop. Fun spins and big wins are right at your fingertips with over 1,000 games, including High Five Casino exclusives. High Five Casino is always free to play with free coins given out every 4 hours. Sign up today and get free welcome coins you can spin for a chance at cash prizes. Visit highfivecasino.com.
High Five Casino.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. Must be 21 years or older. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey parents, Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then, learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.